Michael, thanks so much for being with us. I love the book. I read it when it first came out, and then with the new release in paperback, went back and read it again, and it's such a compelling story. What was it that drew you to the story of Christopher Knight?
Man, this is like one of these catnip for journalists story. I mean, I don't know if it was like the true crime mystery, the survival story, the philosophy of being alone, the legend, and then like the question of, you know, the great questions: why would you quit the world? And then, you know, what is it like to come back to the world after 27 years of being gone? I mean, how could I not be interested? And, you know, Chris Knight himself is such, you know, whether no matter how you feel about him, and I know over there in Maine there's many, many opinions, but regardless of how you feel, the man is really intelligent and has some pretty interesting things to say when he does decide to say something.
Yeah, and you talked about the legend, and he was certainly that and more, although, yes, not universally beloved. There were those people, even people whose properties were broken into, who were fine, and who said throughout the book that even if they had come upon him, they might not have called anybody. But others who took it as a great personal affront, felt violated, never felt safe. So even within the North Pond area, there were differing opinions about him.
Yeah, and I find that to be interesting. And just for your probably few listeners who don't know it, I mean, in a nutshell, it's a story about a guy who escaped the world at age 20, abandoned his car at the shores of Moosehead Lake, went into the woods with very little supplies, and didn't come out again for 27 years, eventually settled into an extraordinary little campsite in the Belgrade Lake area, and survived by breaking into second homes in the, you know, the camps around the seasonal camps around the Belgrade Lakes, and you know, had a code, which was no one was home when he broke in, never kicked down a door, broke a window, wouldn't touch your television, your computer, your jewelry, but would take your, you know, your steaks, your Stephen King novel, and your flashlight. And like you said, if you're the type of person who needs all your characters to be black or white, good or evil, you might want a different book. But Chris Knight, to me, he's extraordinary, but there's a lot of shades of gray. He's a thief. He is a survivor. He's an intellectual. He's annoying. You know, I really enjoyed my, you know, I'm speaking to you from my home here in Montana, so I'm familiar with rural countryside and cold winters. And so I always felt wonderfully welcomed in Maine. In fact, I got to tell you, don't tell my Montana friends, I always wanted a coastline in Montana. And you guys had everything Montana has plus a coastline.
We have that, that's for sure, yeah.
I know, we were missing that. So I always felt warmly welcomed, and it was always so much fun to talk to people about the victims of his crime, and there are such varied reactions. You know, some people were like, yeah, if I'd have caught him, I'd have let him go. And other guys like, you know, I hid out in the dark for 14 days with my gun. I was going to take him down. And it was always never less than entertaining. I don't think there was a single person who didn't care. Everybody cared passionately, but in a different way.
What's fascinating, too, for anybody who doesn't know the story, is that all those years, those 27 years, winters as cold as they get in Maine, and he never set a fire because the smoke would, of course, be a signal to other people where he might be.
I'm picturing a couple of your listeners right now shaking their head saying, that is not possible. And I'm going to tell you, I understand where you're coming from. Like I said, I'm here in Montana. Look, I don't want to spend one night in the woods without a big blazing bonfire. I'm telling you, he spent 27 winters out there. He did not sleep in anyone's cabin, and he never lit a fire. I wanted to catch him in a lie. I know that it's unbelievable. I went to his site 7 different times. I just wanted to find a charred piece of wood and be like, aha, you did have a fire. Or I wanted one person, you know, there was dozens of cabins that installed video cameras. Just one person, show me an image of him sleeping in your bed or taking a shower, and nobody could. The man has a lot of quirks about him, but one of his quirks is that he's almost incapable of lying. This is a guy who didn't want attention. This is a guy who didn't even want me to write a book, to be honest with you. He wanted to be anonymous. This isn't a guy who's bragging about a feat that he didn't do. He had an amazing, you know, and for anybody who's interested, we can get into the nitty gritty. He, you know, since I like to camp, I was interested in many aspects, but like some of the survival stuff, like, so what did you do to not, like, how did you not lose a toe to frostbite? We went through every little detail, and everything he said made sense. And he came up with it himself. He left the world at age 20, never had an elder's advice again after the age of 20, and survived he has quite a head on his shoulders.
And even you talk about frostbite and the feet, especially, and it's a little nugget in there deep in the book where he says, dry is better than cold. And his feet at the time would not get warm, but as long as he had dry socks, he felt okay.
Yeah, and for example, let's just get into, I think the number one thing people can't believe is this survival without a fire. I mean, he didn't get sick for 30 years. At first, you don't believe that. Then you talk to a doctor, and you're like, to get sick, you got to have germs or a virus pass from you. And if you don't have people around, you're not going to get sick. 27 years without getting sick. I mean, you can still get things like diabetes or cancer, but never got a cold or anything. But, I asked him, Chris, so at the depth of cold, would you just huddle yourself into like a little ball and just, what I do when I'm cold and I'm camping, I just clutch myself into like a fetal position. And Chris had a funny way of expressing that my ideas were, shall we say, less than intelligent. He would sort of slide his eyes over to me and give me this like long, disappointed blink as in, I could have picked a smarter journalist to talk to. And he's like, that was completely wrong. What Chris Knight would do, and this is just a little nugget, is at about 2 o'clock in the morning on winter nights, which is about the depth of cold, when I'll just speak for myself, when I would be trying to clutch my blankets around me, he would get out of his bed, out of his tent, and put on his shoes, his dry shoes, and walk, pace the small perimeter of his campsite. And he would shovel the snow, so he was literally walled in with snow for months at a time, and pace all night, every night, all winter, every winter, for 27 winters. He paced and paced and paced, and that way kept himself from freezing from hypothermia, and never so much as lost a toenail to frostbite. But boy, think about the toughness and sort of interior drive that you have to do that, not just one night or two nights, but hundreds and thousands of nights.
And as he said, he was worried that if he slipped into that comfort of sleep in those conditions, that he would run the risk of dying right in that sleeping bag.
I mean, I've been talking to, some people around the country, but it's always nice to talk to folks in Maine because I don't have to explain how cold it gets there. These Florida stations, they're like, it probably gets to like 30 degrees, 45 degrees. I'm like, yeah, how it goes there when you get that first snowfall sometimes, before Halloween, and dang, it's May and there's still snow on the ground. You know how long and how cold and how wet and how windy it can get there. And to go all that time, I mean, if you go for a week of camping with fire in winter, I'm pretty impressed in Maine, but, let alone a season and let alone no fire, let alone 27 of them. It's, it is, like I said at the outset, just about impossible to believe, and yet at the same time, completely true. I'm very fortunate as a journalist. I could, I might work 100 years and never come across a richer, more fascinating, more kind of varied story than this one.
We're talking with Michael Finkel, author of The Stranger in the Woods, The Extraordinary Story of the Last True Hermit. And as you point out in the book, it's not unusual, certainly among the Stoics, to make this decision. And look, we all have days when the life of a hermit sounds pretty appealing. But for most people, that's something historically that they might have done at the end of their life. In all your conversations with Chris, did you ever get to the bottom of what made him walk away from society at such a young age?
You're absolutely right. Humans are very, very social creatures, social animals, as you could tell from, watch a human with 7 seconds of free time. What they pick out their phone and look at Twitter. We like to be connected. But there have always been, as you mentioned, throughout history, those who wanted to be apart. And sometimes it was religious reasons, sometimes it was artistic reasons, sometimes it was anger at the world. And there's been some very bright people, scientists, artists, et cetera. But Chris did leave a lot earlier than most people. And of course, I wanted to know why. And his answer, it might sound a little frustrating. He said to me that when he was in high school and a little bit older, he said he never felt comfortable being around other people. He was, and we all know shy people and introverted people, but he had a real extreme case of that. And he felt, I think he described it as something like a gravitational tug. He just felt this desire be by himself. And it's been a long time since I was 20 years old, but I did a couple of crazy things in my 20s. And he had this just brash idea. He had just purchased, his brother signed a loan with him, poor brother, a brand new car, a Subaru Brat. It was the most expensive thing he had ever purchased in his life. And you figure that's a sign of not someone who's about to like abandon the world, but he abandoned that Subaru Brat in the woods near the shore of Moosehead Lake, and just without nearly enough supplies, you know, just went into the woods and didn't seem to have a plan. So why did he leave? He left because he felt this sort of urge to leave. But I think almost more interesting is, like, you know, why did he stay? Why did he stay? Why didn't you just do a week or a month or even a year? Why decades? In fact, he never came out voluntarily. He was an arrest that brought about. And the reason why he stayed was more interesting to me. He stayed because he really liked it. Did he suffer? Yeah, he was cold and he was hungry, but he expressed a lot of satisfaction, enjoyment, joy from a very rugged an existence that most of us really couldn't imagine, fulfilled him in a way that really struck me when I was talking to him in jail. Like, the sort of satisfaction with his life's course rattled me a little bit. It made me question some of my own decisions, and, you know, he expressed more satisfaction with his life than, frankly, most people I just meet in the street and in the world out here.
I was fascinated by the conversation you had with him about environmental noise and the fact that out in the woods, free from distractions and that ever-present hum, that his memory was incredible. And you even talked to some scientific experts who said that in those situations, we can be operating at a much, greater level of brain power.
Now, I'm sure, because I'm talking to you in Maine, that we got a lot of outdoors folks listening. And I bet you, have you noticed that when you've gone camping or when you spend a lot of time, I think we're kind of like in a better mood. We're like feeling good. And it's not really because we're on vacation. And I'm not going to get too bogged down in science stuff here, but I think you know that humans are about a 2 million year old species, and we all evolve as hunter-gatherers. Every single one of our senses, our sense of smell, hearing, touch, was honed and is pretty much attuned to being out in nature, to being a hunter. It's only evolution is so much slower than technological revolution, and we're all calibrated to being outside in nature. It's not There's been scientific studies around the world, and they've all said the same thing. We are calmer. You can measure it in the blood pressure and your heartbeat. We are smarter. We are happier when we're out in the woods. And Chris, by hook or by crook or by knowledge or by luck, found himself in the ideal place for maximum brain function. You should hear when he talks about a book he read 25 years ago. It's as if he read it last night. He has like almost total recall. I found it very daunting. I'm not the smartest guy you'll ever meet, but I felt completely outclassed by his mind. And it was another one of the many, many fascinating aspects of working on Chris's story.
Well, he clearly chose this life of stoicism and stuck with it for years and years. And at one point in the book, you say that he lived for a living. Was he fulfilled by that life in the woods?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not forgiving him for being a criminal, but my encounters with Chris in the story sort of, you know, made me question a few things. He's like, you know, what do you do with your life? You're spending the prime of your life in a cubicle staring at a computer in exchange for money, and that's thought of as good. And I'm spending the prime of my life in a tent breathing good air and just thinking free thoughts, and that's bad. You know, cutting down trees is enterprising. You know, looking at trees is lazy. And he just sort of said a few things that, you know, made me think. And again, Chris did not. He took other people's stuff. They worked hard for a living. I am not unaware of the contradictions here. And in fact, I try to highlight them in the book and let you decide how you feel. But if you're at all curious about extremes of human nature and a local Maine story, you know, he will make you think. He might make you mad. He might make you joyous. He might make you some combination of all three. He's a complicated person. And I didn't shy away from it. In fact, I tried my hardest to bring out all the complications in someone like Chris Knight.
Michael, your last couple of communications with him were very poignant and powerful, and especially that last one, which at least gives us the impression of being hopeful going forward. Do you think it's possible that Chris has been able to find peace in this outside world?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things if you sense from listening to me talk that there's a warmth in my voice about Chris, well, that it is true. I admit it. I do feel warmly about him. I try to be as impartial as possible in writing the book, but there were things that just really amazed me about him. And I did, I admit to you, worry, like, oh my gosh, this is a sensitive individual, whether he's a thief, but he's also quite sensitive. Is he going to be able to survive in the world. And without giving too much away, at first it was extraordinarily difficult, but Chris is a true survivor and also has a strong mind. And I can't be sure. We're no longer in contact. He did not want to be my friend. He told me what he wanted to tell me and told me to get lost, and I had no choice but to get lost. And so from what I know, he's doing okay. Although I have to tell you, Rich, every once in a while, I think I'm going to hear news that he's disappeared into the woods again. And if I do hear that news, I'll probably have a little small smile on my lips, just as long as he's not stealing from people. He really wasn't built for our world. And, you know, it's one of the sub-themes of the book is, what do you do with someone who's just doesn't fit into the world? If you're a murderer, well, then we got jails for you. If you're completely crazy, we have hospitals for you. But someone who's neither of those things and still doesn't fit in, we just don't have a place for you. And it's one of the sort of melancholy little thoughts that we discuss in the book.
Well, it's such a fascinating story. And for anybody who hasn't read it, out now in paperback, The Stranger in the Woods, the extraordinary story of the last true hermit. You really capture the full story of Christopher Knight. It is a wonderful read. We thank you for being with us. And, well, I hope that the Cowboys, as Chris would call them, are doing well also.
The Cowboys, he's referring to my children, and they're as loud and non-hermit-like as possible. But thank you for asking. And I really appreciate you having me on the show to discuss this interesting story.
Thank you so much, Michael. We appreciate it.